Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Dominican Republic Episode 1, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1, The First Footsteps, The Taino Civilization, The Land Before Contact. The island now known as Hispaniola, which houses modern-day Dominican Republic, was once an unspoiled paradise of rolling hills, lush rainforests, and fertile valleys. Rivers meandered through the land, their waters teeming with fish, while the Caribbean sun bathed the shores in golden warmth. The air hummed with the sounds of life, birds in the canopy, the rustling of palm trees, and the rhythmic lap of the ocean against the sands. This was a world untouched by foreign hands, a land carefully molded by the hands of time and its first caretakers, the Taino people. The arrival of the Taino. The ancestors of the Taino were Arawakan-speaking peoples who migrated from the Orinoco Basin in present-day Venezuela. Their journey across the sea was perilous, but their mastery of navigation led them to the Caribbean islands. As early as 400 BCE, the Taino had firmly established settlements across the Greater Antilles, with Hispaniola as one of their most significant hubs. With their arrival, they cultivated the land, forging a civilization that thrived in harmony with the natural world. Their villages were scattered across the island, each ruled by a cacique chief who presided over the people with wisdom and authority. Their homes, known as bohayos, were simple yet sturdy, constructed from palm and thatch, blending seamlessly with the landscape. The foundations of Taino society. The Taino had a highly organized society, divided into distinct classes. The Natainos, nobles and warriors, second in command to the cacique. The Bohiques, spiritual leaders and shamans, guiding religious practices and healing the sick. The Naborias, commoners and laborers, tending to agriculture, fishing, and crafting. At the heart of their civilization was a profound respect for nature. The Taino believed that every tree, river, and mountain had a soul, a living entity that required harmony and balance. This belief shaped their way of life, from their farming techniques to their communal rituals. The lifeblood of Taino civilization, agriculture and trade. The Taino were exceptional agriculturists, mastering the art of canuco farming, a system of raised mounds that prevented soil erosion and retained moisture. They cultivated cassava, maize, sweet potatoes, peanuts, and peppers, ensuring a stable food supply. Fishing was equally vital. Using expertly crafted canoes, some large enough to carry dozens of men, they ventured into the seas, catching fish with nets woven from palm fibers. Their diet was rich and varied, featuring tropical fruits like guava, papaya, and pineapple, supplemented by small game such as iguanas and huishes. Trade flourished between islands, with goods such as cotton, pottery, and gold ornaments exchanged among the different Taino communities and even with neighboring Carib tribes. Gold was not valued as currency, but was used for ornamentation and spiritual purposes, particularly in the form of zimi figures, sacred representations of their gods. A spiritual world, religion and mythology. The Taino's spiritual beliefs were deeply ingrained in their daily lives. They worshipped multiple deities, the most significant being Yukahu, the god of agriculture, and Atabe, the goddess of fertility and fresh waters. Religious ceremonies, or oritos, were grand occasions where stories of creation and heroic ancestors were told through song and dance. One of their most sacred rituals involved the Cohoba ceremony, a trance-inducing practice performed by Bohiques to communicate with the spirits. The Taino believed that through Cohoba, they could receive guidance from the ancestors and the gods, ensuring prosperity for their people. Social and recreational life. Despite their structured society, the Taino found joy in communal activities. They played baiti, a ceremonial ball game played on a large court, often linked to religious and political events. Music and dance were central to their identity, with drums, maracas, and flutes providing the rhythm of their gatherings. Marriage and family life were central to Taino society. Chiefs often had multiple wives to solidify alliances, while common families lived in extended kinship groups, ensuring collective responsibility and protection. Encounters with the unknown, the dawn of change. For centuries, the Taino thrived, their existence undisturbed by outside forces. But whispers of distant lands and mysterious floating houses, Spanish ships, would soon shatter their world. Though they had never seen metal weapons or horses, their myths spoke of pale-skinned deities, and some would mistake the Europeans for these celestial beings. Little did they know, the arrival of Christopher Columbus and his men in 1492 would mark the beginning of an irreversible transformation. Their land, once a paradise, would become the battleground for conquest, resistance, and survival. Closing thoughts, a legacy that lives on. Though the Taino civilization faced devastation in the wake of European colonization, their legacy endures in the bloodlines, language, and culture of modern Dominicans. Words such as hurricane, huracan, hammock, hamaca, and barbecue, barbacoa, originate from their language and many customs, from food preparation to storytelling traditions, trace their roots back to these first settlers. The Taino were more than just an indigenous people. They were the first architects of the Dominican Republic's history, laying the foundation for a land that would endure centuries of upheaval yet remain resilient. Their story, though often overshadowed, is a testament to a civilization that thrived in harmony with nature, a civilization whose spirit still whispers through the land they once called home. Chapter 2, Columbus and the Collision of Worlds, 1492-1502. The arrival of Columbus, a world forever changed. In the autumn of 1492, the Caribbean Sea bore witness to an event that would forever alter the destiny of the land and its people. On the morning of October 12, 1492, after months at sea, the three ships, the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria, crested the horizon, their sails billowing in the wind. Christopher Columbus and his men, weary yet elated, set foot on an island they named San Salvador in the modern-day Bahamas. But the journey did not end there. Hispaniola, the fertile and bountiful land inhabited by the Taino, became his next destination, a place he would see as the heart of Spain's future empire. Upon arrival in December 1492, Columbus marveled at the lush landscape, the abundance of fresh water, and the seemingly peaceful nature of the indigenous people. The Taino, curious and welcoming, approached the Spaniards with open hands, offering gifts of food, cotton, and small ornaments of gold. This first contact between the old world and the new was cordial. Yet beneath the surface, it was laced with misunderstanding and an ominous imbalance of power. The Taino perspective, gods or intruders. For the Taino, the appearance of Columbus and his men was nothing short of mystical. Their mythology spoke of spirits and otherworldly beings, and some among them believed the pale-skinned visitors were Zemi or celestial beings sent from the heavens. Others, more cautious, saw them as intruders whose presence would disrupt the natural balance of their world. Unbeknownst to them, their hospitality would soon be met with conquest. The Spanish, enchanted by tales of gold and wealth, quickly sought to establish dominance over the Taino. Columbus, fixated on the potential riches, inquired about the sources of gold, and the Taino, unfamiliar with European greed, pointed him toward rivers and regions where gold dust shimmered under the sun. This was all Columbus needed to confirm his ambitions. Hispaniola would be the gateway to Spanish dominion in the New World. La Navidad, the first European settlement. On Christmas Eve of 1492, disaster struck Columbus's fleet when the Santa Maria ran aground off the northern coast of Hispaniola. With no means to salvage the ship, Columbus decided to leave behind a small garrison of men and establish a settlement, which he named La Navidad. He believed that the Taino, who had been friendly thus far, would provide the Spaniards with food and security until he returned with reinforcements from Spain. Leaving 39 men behind, Columbus set sail back to Spain in early 1493, eager to report his findings to the Catholic monarchs, King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella. What he did not foresee, however, was that his men, emboldened by their newfound power, would mistreat their Taino hosts, demanding women, food, and wealth. Within months, tensions escalated, and upon Columbus's return, he found La Navidad razed to the ground, its inhabitants slaughtered. The Taino had fought back. The second voyage, a shift toward conquest, 1493 to 1496. Determined to press forward despite the loss of La Navidad, Columbus returned with a fleet of 17 ships and 1,200 men, ready to expand Spanish rule. This time, he was no longer a mere explorer. He was an agent of colonization. The foundation of La Isabella, 1494. Columbus established La Isabella, the first planned European settlement in the Americas. Unlike the temporary La Navidad, this settlement was fortified, signaling Spain's intention to stay. The first conflicts, as Spanish demands increased, so did the Taino resistance. Cacique Cayanabo, a fierce leader from the interior, led the charge against the invaders, attempting to drive them from his land. The introduction of forced labor, Columbus, frustrated with the lack of immediate wealth, enslaved the Taino, forcing them to mine gold and serve the settlers. Those who resisted faced brutal retribution. Taino resistance and the rise of Enriquillo. The increasing oppression led to an eruption of resistance movements. Cayanabo and his warriors attacked Spanish forts, destroying settlements and capturing or killing European soldiers. Though Cayanabo himself was eventually captured and sent to Spain in chains, the seeds of rebellion had been sown. One of the most significant uprisings would later be led by Enriquillo, a Taino noble who, after witnessing his people's suffering, orchestrated a decade-long resistance against Spanish rule. Though his rebellion would occur in the early 1500s, it was a direct consequence of the cruelty initiated by Columbus's policies. The Spanish strategy, divide and conquer. The Spanish, realizing that direct warfare was costly, employed a divide and conquer strategy. They allied with rival Taino chiefs, turning former friends into enemies. They exploited the Taino's hospitality, manipulating their generosity for personal gain. They introduced European diseases, smallpox and measles, which devastated the indigenous population, weakening resistance efforts. By 1500, the once thriving Taino civilization was in decline, not from war alone, but from the combined effects of forced labor, disease, and systematic oppression. Columbus's downfall and the transformation of Hispaniola. Despite his initial success, Columbus faced growing criticism from the Spanish crown. Reports of mismanagement, corruption, and brutality reached Spain, and by 1500, he was removed from his position as governor. He was arrested and sent back to Spain in disgrace, though he would later be pardoned. In Columbus's absence, Nicolás de Ovando took control, bringing a far more ruthless rule. Under his governance, large-scale slaughter of the Taino escalated, and Hispaniola was fully transformed into Spain's first colonial stronghold in the Americas. The end of an era, the beginning of a new world. By the early 1500s, the fate of the Taino was sealed. Their population, once in the hundreds of thousands, had plummeted. Those who survived were either enslaved, assimilated into Spanish society, or pushed into the mountains where they eked out a fragile existence. Yet, despite their near erasure from history, the Taino's legacy persisted. Their language lives on in words like hurricane, canoe, hammock, and barbecue. Their agricultural techniques influenced Caribbean farming practices for centuries. Their bloodline endures. Many Dominicans today carry Taino ancestry. As Columbus's voyages marked the dawn of the Spanish Empire in the Americas, they also signaled the tragic downfall of the Taino. Hispaniola, once a land of abundance and peace, had become the site of the first European conquest in the New World, setting the stage for the centuries of colonization, rebellion, and transformation that would follow. Chapter 3, Spain's First Colony, Santo Domingo, 1502-1600. The birth of Santo Domingo, the first European stronghold in the New World. By the dawn of the 16th century, the island of Hispaniola had transformed from a thriving Taino civilization to a Spanish-controlled colony. With Columbus removed from power, the Spanish crown sought to establish a more permanent and structured settlement, laying the foundation for what would become Santo Domingo, the first European city in the Americas. The arrival of Nicolás de Ovando, 1502. In 1502, Nicolás de Ovando, a seasoned Spanish nobleman, arrived in Hispaniola with a fleet of 30 ships and over 2,500 settlers, the largest Spanish expedition to the Americas at the time. His mission was clear: to organize the colony, subdue the remaining Taino resistance, and maximize the island's economic potential. Under Ovando's rule, Santo Domingo was officially founded on the southern coast, strategically positioned to serve as Spain's administrative and military center in the Caribbean. The city was built according to European principles, featuring the first grid-patterned streets, a fort, a church, and administrative buildings that signified Spain's dominion. The system of encomienda, the exploitation of the Taino. To sustain the growing Spanish presence, the encomienda system was introduced, a feudal-like system that forced the indigenous Taino into labor under Spanish landowners. Each settler who was granted an encomienda received land and control over a group of Taino workers, whom they were expected to Christianize while exploiting them for agriculture and mining. Forced labor. Taino men were sent to gold mines, working under brutal conditions. Agricultural expansion. Sugarcane and other crops were cultivated for export. Severe population decline. Disease, overwork, and mistreatment decimated the Taino population, with some estimates suggesting a decline from hundreds of thousands to just a few thousand within a few decades. The resistance and downfall of the Taino. Despite facing overwhelming odds, the Taino fought back. Some fled to remote regions, while others took up arms in rebellions led by charismatic leaders like Enriquillo, who waged guerrilla warfare against the Spaniards for years. Enriquillo's rebellion was so effective that by 1533, the Spanish crown was forced to sign a peace treaty, granting autonomy to the last remaining Taino fighters in exchange for an end to hostilities. The introduction of African slavery, 1510s to 1520s. With the Taino population dwindling, the Spanish turned to West African slaves, marking the beginning of the transatlantic slave trade in the Americas. The first African slaves arrived in 1510, and by the mid-1500s, enslaved Africans became the primary labor force on Hispaniola's sugar plantations. The mix of Spanish, Taino, and African influences would eventually shape the island's language, cuisine, and cultural identity. Santo Domingo as the hub of the Spanish Empire. By the mid-16th century, Santo Domingo had evolved into the political, economic, and military center of Spain's New World Empire. The Casa de Contratación regulated all trade and movement to and from the Americas, with wealth pouring into the city from mining and agriculture. Key developments included the Cathedral of Santa Maria la Menor, 1520, won the first cathedral in the Americas. The Alcázar de Colón, a grand residence built for Diego Columbus, son of Christopher Columbus. The first universities and institutions, establishing Santo Domingo as a center for learning. Trade and smuggling. Spanish officials controlled commerce, but illicit trade with other European powers, particularly the Dutch and English, flourished. Pirates, privateers, and foreign threats, 1550s–1600. With Spain amassing immense wealth from the Americas, European rivals began to challenge Spanish dominance. Pirates and privateers, often sanctioned by enemy nations, targeted Spanish ships and settlements. Santo Domingo became a key target. Francis Drake's raid, 1586, the infamous English privateer captured Santo Domingo, ransoming the city for a large sum before withdrawing. Fortifications and defenses. The Spanish built La Fortaleza Ozama, a military fort, to protect against further attacks. Decline of Santo Domingo's wealth. As Spain shifted its focus to Mexico and Peru, Santo Domingo's importance waned. The end of an era, a colony in transition. By 1600, Santo Domingo had firmly established itself as the first European colony in the Americas, but it faced a shifting political and economic landscape. The exploitation of the Taino had run its course, African slavery had become the dominant labor force, and Spain's focus had turned elsewhere, leaving Santo Domingo vulnerable to external threats. Though overshadowed by the emerging wealth of Mexico and Peru, Santo Domingo remained a critical part of Spain's colonial empire, its legacy woven into the very fabric of the Dominican Republic's history. Chapter 4, Pirates, Privateers, and Smugglers, 1600 to 1700. The Changing Landscape of Hispaniola. By the dawn of the 17th century, the island of Hispaniola, and particularly its capital, Santo Domingo, found itself in a precarious position. Once the crown jewel of Spain's American empire, the colony had begun to decline in prominence as Spain shifted its attention and resources toward the wealth of Mexico and Peru. With dwindling financial and military support from the Spanish crown, Hispaniola became increasingly vulnerable to external threats, particularly from European rivals seeking to exploit Spain's weakening grip on the Caribbean. The rise of pirates and privateers. The Caribbean became a breeding ground for piracy as European powers, including England, France, and the Netherlands, sought to weaken Spanish dominance in the region. These nations deployed privateers, government-sanctioned pirates, to harass Spanish shipping routes and raid settlements. Santo Domingo, as Spain's primary settlement in the region, became a prime target. Francis Drake's raid on Santo Domingo, 1586. Although slightly outside the scope of this century, Drake's infamous attack on Santo Domingo in 1586 set the precedent for what was to come. The English privateer successfully captured and ransomed the city, demonstrating Spain's vulnerability. His assault sent shockwaves through the empire, prompting fortification efforts, but it also emboldened other European powers to target Spain's Caribbean holdings. The Buccaneers of Tortuga, 1625-1650. The island of Tortuga, located off the northwestern coast of Hispaniola, became the base for a notorious group of pirates known as the Buccaneers. Originally a mix of French, English, and Dutch adventurers, these outlaws established a stronghold from which they launched attacks on Spanish settlements and ships. The Spanish attempted to dislodge them multiple times, but their efforts largely failed due to the lack of sustained military presence. 1630s, French privateers solidified control of Tortuga. 1640s, the Buccaneers expanded operations to the southern coast of Hispaniola, attacking Spanish holdings. 1650s, Spanish forces briefly reclaimed Tortuga, but France soon reasserted control, formalizing its presence on the island. Smuggling, the economic undercurrent of the Caribbean. With Spanish control weakening, an illicit trade network flourished throughout Hispaniola. Spanish merchants, unable to receive goods regularly from Spain due to piracy and inefficient shipping routes, turned to illegal trade with the Dutch, English, and French. Key smuggling goods: sugar, tobacco, cattle, and textiles. Major participants: Spanish settlers, foreign merchants, and privateers. Effects on the colony. The economy became increasingly dependent on non-Spanish trade, eroding Spanish sovereignty. The Treaty of Ryswick, 1697, the birth of Saint-Domingue. By the late 17th century, Spain's control over the entire island was no longer tenable. France had established a significant presence on the western third of Hispaniola, leading to the formal division of the island under the Treaty of Ryswick in 1697. Spain officially ceded the western portion of Hispaniola to France, giving birth to Saint-Domingue, which would later become Haiti. This loss signified a crucial shift. Spain's colonial decline. The Spanish crown struggled to maintain its Caribbean territories. France's Caribbean ascendancy. Saint-Domingue would go on to become one of the wealthiest colonies in the world. Conclusion: a century of transition. The 17th century marked a tumultuous period for Hispaniola. Spanish Santo Domingo endured repeated pirate raids, economic struggles, and territorial losses, while foreign powers carved out new footholds on the island. This century laid the groundwork for the geopolitical and social transformations that would shape the island's destiny in the centuries to come. In the next chapter, we will explore the rise of Saint-Domingue as a dominant force and the continued struggles of Spanish Santo Domingo in the face of increasing external pressures.